guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Becoming Her podcast with your host, Victoria McHugh. I am so excited for our guest episode this week with my beautiful friend and business partner, Lauren Peters. And I know that you guys are going to get so much from it. She is the epitome of warrior and resilient, and the reinvention that she has had multiple times in her life is truly remarkable. She is a solo mom of three. She's got an incredible online sales business. She's an Instagram influencer. She's a health and wellness advocate and just embodies becoming her. Her story is going to blow you away. You are going to cry, you are going to laugh, and hopefully you are going to leave this episode feeling so, so inspired. So buckle up, and I hope you enjoy the show. So everybody, please welcome my beautiful friends to the Becoming Her podcast, Lauren Peters.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Guys, this has been a long time coming that Lauren and I have wanted to share this story. We have gone through so much over the last 8 years together, and I'm so proud of you, Lauren, that finally you feel ready to speak about what you've been through over the last 5-6 years. I know that anyone who follows you on social media has seen you go through it all, but I don't think anybody really understands how traumatic and life-changing a lot of what you've been through has been. And I'm really excited for you to add value to other people and to hopefully change some lives today. So before we get started, how are you feeling?
I am nervous. Very nervous, I guess, because I haven't spoken about this publicly before. And I think I've always known that this day is coming. I've always really been like, I want to share this story one day. But yeah, just like talking about it publicly and all the things is scary. I guess I never really wanted to speak about it while I was in it. And I never wanted this to be like a bash anyone type of thing. I wanted it to be coming from a place of like perspective and my own lessons and, you know, how I've survived and come out the other side. So I guess just to first say, like, this is my own truth and my perspective on what happened, and I've come a long way from it all, but I, out of respect, am not going to be mentioning names. So when I do talk, I'm going to be referring to my ex-husband as Mackenzie's dad and my ex as the boy's dad. So just so you guys can understand that, just really out of respect.
Fantastic. So I think everyone needs to grab a tea or a wine while they listen to this one. Everybody is going to know somebody that has been through something similar. And I think this is the perfect place to start. So let's go back a little bit. I want to know, who is Lauren Peters? What was your childhood like? How did you end up, you know, married at a really young age? Tell us everything that we need to know to get to know the girl that is now.
Yeah. So I grew up in a very, very small country town in a little town called Berrydale in New South Wales, which is not far from the ski fields. So Perisher and Threadbury, if anyone knows where that is, and Gindermine. So there was about 800 people in our town, which is like people just cannot even comprehend how small it was. But childhood was good. Like my mum and dad owned the local general store in our town. So mum was working a lot between opening and closing the shop and managing another business. And dad was busy managing two businesses himself. I am the eldest of three girls. So the older sister to my sisters, Ellen and Georgia, which, was interesting growing up with three girls. There was a lot of like feminine energy in the house, not much masculine. And yeah, super basic childhood, really. There was nothing crazy exciting. It was really great. I grew up playing netball dancing, all of the things we did on Wednesdays for sport during winter. We did school skiing, which was, I feel so blessed to kind of have that experience growing up. It was just normal to, instead of going the oval, we'd just go to the snow for the day, and learn how to ski and snowboard. So we were outside and in nature and being able to experience some really cool things growing up. But as I got older, I was like, I hate this small town bullshit. I really wanted to just get out. And I definitely saw lots of people kind of getting stuck in this like small town. You know, they have kids there, they stay there, and nothing becomes of their life. They just, that's kind of harsh to say, but I'm like, I want more for my life. I'm not going to stay around. Mum, you know, knew that I was going to be on my way as soon as I could. So I was about 18, or I think just turned 19 maybe, when I moved out of home. That's when I moved to Canberra, which was 2 hours away from me pretty much, which is where we met coincidentally. And yeah, that was great. While I was there, I was kind of just finding my feet as a young woman and working and just getting into the workforce and experiencing all those things. And that is when I actually met my ex-husband. So it was actually random. So we grew up in a very, very, like very close to each other, like 20 kilometers from each other, but never knew each other growing up. He was, I think, 5 or 6 years older than me. So when we met, I was 19 and we were at a party. So it was like a combined 18th and 30th. And it's a really funny story how we met, but fell in love. Things moved relatively quickly. He was actually living in Townsville at the time and I was in Canberra. So we were doing long distance. And I think a few months into doing that, I was like, I'm moving up like to Townsville. I'm sure Mum was probably like, oh my God, what is happening? Like, she just couldn't stop me. I was like, I'm in love. Like, this is what I'm doing. So she had a little freak out, but I moved to Townsville to be with him. So I got a job up there, which was kind of like the beginning of this whole new life for myself. I really left all the party days and the, you know, that single life behind. And I was like, I want this new life now. And I think like growing up, I always wanted to be a mum. I always wanted to have like that family dynamic and buy the house and get married. And like, I kind of like, you could not have talked me out of that. At that point in my life, I was like, this is what I want. When I was in Townsville living with him, he was in the army. That was when my mom actually found out she had breast cancer. And so that was a bit of a, like, it was a hard time. Like, I just moved away and found out that mom had like quite a bad breast cancer. So she had started her radiation and having operations and having chemo. And that was, I actually moved back down to the Snowy Mountains for a little while to support her and just be there for her. I was like, I'm coming, you can't stop me. And Mackenzie's dad actually left the army due to some shoulder injuries. And so we actually saved her house while supporting my mum in the Snowy Mountains going through that hard time. So I'm really grateful I could be there for her during that time. And we had a goal of buying a house, really setting up a life for ourselves. And so we actually bought a house in Brisbane. And randomly, I don't even know why we picked Brisbane. I think it was like house prices at the time. We like rolled the dice and we're like, cool, let's go to Queensland. We were so over the cold as well. We just wanted somewhere warm. So on our way, we bought a house. And on our way traveling to Queensland, I found out I was pregnant with Mackenzie. So we'd actually been trying for like 6 or 8 months or something, I think. Like we wanted a kid really bad. And it didn't happen straight away, which is weird because I was like, why? I'm young and I'm, you know, healthy and all the things. But mum was really dirty that she was going to be away from her first grandchild. I was like moving interstate and dropping that bomb on her. So it was a really hard time actually. Moving into state, being a young mom, I was 21. Like, I look at 21-year-olds now and I'm like, literal babies. But I just thought, like, I knew everything. I thought, this is what I want. I'm engaged, we've bought a house, like this is what happens. You just settle down and, you know, you get married and you have that. Like, I just kind of thought that's what you do now. Like you, and everyone in the army kind of does that, to be honest. Like they just get married, have families, like it's just kind of what you do. So I found myself in this whole new life and this whole new, you know, finding myself as a young mom in a new city where I really knew no one. And working from home as well, not even having like a work environment where I could meet work colleagues. So I was barely leaving the house. It was actually a really hard time for me. Yeah.
So looking back at who you were then, obviously not saying that you would ever want to replace the beautiful Mackenzie and not have your life go that way. If you could give advice to your 21-year-old self now, going into a marriage, moving into state, you know, being with someone in the military, which in itself has a lot of challenges that comes with it, what advice would you give somebody who wanted to, I guess, rush it and have all of those things and that like white picket fence at the age of 21?
Yeah. Oh God. I mean, if I could go back and talk to myself, I'd shake myself and slap myself and be like, you don't know what you want yet. You're like, this ain't it. Like, don't settle. But, you know, you only know what you know at the time. So like you said, I wouldn't change anything because I love the way things have gone for me. And I think being a mom early, like really molded so much of who I am today. And I love that I am a young mom with Kenzie. Like, I just feel like she's my mate and my bestie. But obviously now looking back, being 31, like, so 10 years on really, oh, I feel like I'm only just finding myself now in my 30s, and you probably feel similar. Like, I just don't think you really know what you want as a young female. I don't know. I had goggles on. And my world was extremely small. Like it was in this little box and I just couldn't see past what I thought it was.
And I think that that's probably similar for a lot of people, because so much of what we see and what we know becomes our reality. So like you were saying, in terms of that small town mentality and that, you know, finding somebody, moving with them, becoming the wife, becoming the mom, settling down, you know. And I think as time's gone on, especially with what we do, we have realized that there is so much more to that. And this, you know, life can be so different. So let's talk about that period that you had your daughter, Mackenzie. You were 21, you were in a new marriage, and then you started your business. And that's obviously how you and I became friends. So what was that period like for you? Because it was about, was it about 2 years, that period?
Yeah. So Kenzie was 18 months when I started my business. And at that time, I guess I definitely was aware that something was missing, like that I really needed something. I remember, my husband at the time saying like, you need a hobby and you need to, like, I don't know, take up surfing. And he was trying really hard to like give me some ideas. And I just didn't have many friends. I wasn't really looking after my health the way I should. Like, I just didn't know. I didn't know about the gym. And I actually remember writing, like, I remember recording a video because I watched it back, and I was talking about like, I just want to have the confidence to like go for a walk and order my coffee. Like, I literally was just like a completely different person to who I am now. Like, I do not recognize myself. But that period of time, when I found an opportunity to like start a business, that was when my life just, I don't know, it felt lighter. I was so excited. My vision started growing for what was possible for myself. I started working on myself and reading books and diving into this whole world of personal development, which I just thought was hocus pocus before that. Started making friends. I started getting out of my comfort zone. I had a reason to go and try and build friendships and a community around me. And so it was an exciting time, I think. Obviously, it was hard. I was still working. I was still being a mom. I was, you know, having that, the marriage and everything that was going on. We sold our house and moved to the Sunshine Coast. There was a lot on, but I think that was probably the first step to really that initial reinvention was like just being empowered, really. I was like this little puppy that had just discovered this whole new world of like what was possible for myself. And I was so excited. I was just building a business and rocking it and just feeling really, really empowered.
So I love it. I love it because I know the memory so well. And if you had have known Lauren, she was so shy and so intimidated by everything. And to now see you so many years on and everything that you have accomplished and the woman you are, it just makes me so happy. So tell me about the marriage breakdown. How did you go from being newlywed? I'm going to move into state for this man. I want to spend the rest of my life with him. I'm going to have a child with him, to I don't think this is working anymore. What was that moment for you?
I think it was a really slow thing. Like looking back now, I think there was a lot more we could have done in the relationship. And like, I was very young. I was naive. It was my first real proper like relationship outside of, you know, dating young boys at school. And yeah, so I think we could have done a lot more. There was definitely a lack of communication and probably a lot on my part, a lack of communicating my own needs. And I was putting him and being a mom and running a business before myself and what I needed. It was hard, and there's a lot probably that I won't talk about just out of respect, but yeah, I think that it just got to this point where I was like, I this isn't like what I want for my life. Like it just, I was really worn down. And I think when I did bring it up with him, he kind of felt the same. Like it wasn't like the relationship was perfect the whole way through. There were struggles and things going on and things outside of our control too, that a lot that Dan, that Mackenzie's dad had to go through and experience. And so when I brought it up, I was like, I think we just need, I don't know, like something's not working. I'm not happy. And he actually was like, yeah, I agree. Me too. And so it was this weird, like, okay, well, I don't know. It was fairly amicable, to be honest, the whole experience. We kept a lot of respect for each other through that. It was obviously really hard, and there was a lot of emotions and hurt feelings and things. During that time, there was a couple of things that surfaced that I found out about that I think was, I take it as the universe kind of just being like, you're making the right decision. I don't know. Like that was how I took it. And I think he really needed some time on his own too, to really work on himself. And we just needed space.
Thank you for sharing so openly. And the reason I ask those questions is because, you know, there might be somebody listening to this that is in a place in their relationship where they are at a crossroads. Do I stay? Do I go? I want to look after me, but I don't want to break up a family. So I want to ask you, being in that position with a toddler, was there ever a point where you felt like you wanted to stay for the kids or for Mackenzie? Or was there a point where you thought, I need to be happy on my own and he needs to be happy on his own, and together we're going to be better parents? Because I think a lot of people stay, and I don't have kids, so this is just my perspective from people that I speak to. A lot of people stay in unhappy or unhealthy relationships for the kids. And I wonder what you could speak to that as somebody who has gone through it and had a decision to make around that.
Mm. Yeah, and I don't know if there's a right and wrong answer and a like, you should do this and you should do that type thing. I think that looking back, I wish we did a little bit more to maybe just see if, I mean, there's always the shoulda, coulda, woulda, but we're both so happy and in great places now. And I think it was necessary. And I think he knew that too, to have some space. It had gone too far one way. But I think you do need to try, and relationships are not easy. Like, they take hard work and it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable leaving someone and it's uncomfortable staying and doing the work. So it's a choice that, like, you've got to be okay with making. And you know, I think there was definitely, as we were taking some time, there was talk about, you know, just seeing where things go. It wasn't just like a this is the end type thing. But I think it was the right decision, and he's so happy now, and I'm so happy for him, and the same with me. So, you know, but it's definitely hard. And there was obviously a lot of like questioning about what's best for Kenzie. And I did at the end of the day put myself first and go, Kenzie just needs happy parents. And right now I can't keep doing what I'm doing.
And I think I look at you now and I'm so grateful for the decision you made, because she has seen her mom be this, oh, get teary, just, you know, be this warrior. Oh, okay, we're already crying. We knew this would happen. Lauren and I have been through a lot. And I feel like I'm reliving these moments with you. Okay, we're going to get to more, guys. Don't worry. So you've now left the marriage and you're starting single parent life on your own, co-parenting as, how old were you?
23, 24, I think around that time. Kenzie was two.
Yeah. Okay. So we're now in the stage that you are solo parenting, living on your own, and building a business. Talk about that reinvention, because I think that's probably the first one that you had was this, okay, I'm no longer a wife. I'm no longer a part of a unit. It's on me financially and emotionally and physically. I need to be here for this little tiny human. So what was that little period like? For you?
I mean, I think there was definitely an element of like weight lifted off my shoulders coming out of that.
Peace.
Yeah, peace, a sense of kind of like I was lighter, and it was this freedom, and there had been a lot in the relationship that was probably weighing us both down. So that was exciting, just to kind of lean into that. And really, I was at this point, I was like, who is Lauren? Like, who am I? Because my identity was the marriage, the family, all the things. So I was excited. It definitely kicked me up the butt to really take my business seriously. At that point, I was still working full time and just doing the business on the side, which was amazing. It was bringing in extra income, was really taking the pressure off, and I didn't have to worry. Like, as a single mom back then, I remember just being like, thank goodness I had started this business, because it really was helping. And I remember thinking, like, if I hadn't have started, like, it would, life would be really, really hard. So there was, yeah, lots of focus on myself. At that point in time was kind of when I met the boy's dad, and looking back, there wasn't a great deal of time in between those two relationships. And that was definitely something that I kind of wish I had spent more time healing and being on my own. And I just think that I wasn't even really sure what I wanted. You know, I was a bit lost as well, coming out of, you know, a serious relationship that I'd been in since I was 19. So met the boy's dad, which, was it a whirlwind? So he was also a dad, which I think, so he had a daughter who was very similar age to Mackenzie. And I think that was initially what we really bonded over, was kind of like, he'd just come out of a marriage. I had just come out of a marriage. We had the girls who were literally the same age. It was fun. It was so kind of opposite to what my marriage had been. And yeah, just, I guess I was a little blinded by the things. I remember my family kind of disapproving a little bit of the relationship, and also just like things moving quite quick. And I was so annoyed at like people question. I was just like, oh, let me be, like, let me be happy. Let me have fun. Like, I am happy. Why aren't you guys happy for me? I just kind of remember being in this really frustrated phase. I was like, no one gets where I'm at and what I need right now. And I can't actually remember how long it was into the relationship. I fell pregnant with Brody like fairly early on. I remember calling you and being like, bang.
I remember. I need to interject in this story. Okay. I was one of the people that did not approve. And I was one of the people that was not on this team. I was on team Lauren be single for a while. But you just don't know. And I can completely empathize in wanting to mask some of it, especially at that age. You'd been in a marriage, you were so young, you were a mom, you were building a business, like you just needed something, you know, something to kind of mask that. And I understand. I remember you calling me. I was walking down the street in Scotland at the time, and you and I had a trip booked to Vegas for work and to New York. And it was this, well, I wasn't single at the time, but you were, and it was this New York trip, and we were going to go to all the things, do everything that two young 20-year-olds building empires used to do in the US. And I remember being so excited, and you called me. It must have been about the February or the March, and you said, I need to tell you something. I'm pregnant. To this guy you'd been seeing for a few months. And all I remember thinking was, you're gonna be sick our whole trip.
And I was.
You were. And I remember being like, my whole trip's gonna be ruined because Lauren's pregnant. So I do remember that. And let's go into it. So you fell pregnant. How was the relationship while you were pregnant?
There was a lot going on, not gonna lie. So he was working away at the time, and I think he was home, like, it was either like 2 weeks away, 2 weeks home, or like 2 weeks away, 1 week home. I can't actually remember. It changed a lot. He was kind of in and through some jobs and all the things. I was working full-time and like hustling to build my business, because I, in my head, was like, I'm not going back to work. Like, I'm having this kid and I'm staying home and I'm being a present mom, and that's what I want. And so I knew my business was the vehicle to create that. So I remember like having a firecracker up my bum as I was pregnant, being like, this, I have to do this. So it was a lot. Like, I had Dan, Mackenzie's dad and I had agreed on a 50-50 custody of Kenzie. We actually never disagreed on that. It was always kind of like a mutual understanding of like, I want you in her life. You know, really, that wasn't ever a struggle for us. So I had Mackenzie 50% of the time, and he had his daughter 50% of the time. So when I had Mackenzie, he had his daughter, which was good. Like, it worked, and it allowed me some time by myself as well to work my business. But it wasn't the ideal situation, and I was kind of, it was a lot being pregnant early on, having that extra stress on the relationship. During that time, it was a little funny, because I remember having conversations with him saying, imagine if my ex-husband and your ex-wife get together. We literally put it out to the universe. We made this happen. And we always used to say, there is no way that would happen. Like, that's ridiculous. There's no way. Like, they're complete opposite. Anyway, It did happen. Oh, it was so, I don't know, guys.
It's like Jerry Springer style.
Literally cannot
this situation.
Make it up.
You everybody needs to go get a notepad and pen to figure out the family tree.
I was about to say this, like, keep up, okay? Because this is gonna blow your mind. So we had my daughter and his daughter the same week, 50% of the time. And then my daughter would go to her dad's house and he was seeing
the mom
of my partner's daughter. So it was like one big happy family. So the girls would basically be together 100% of the time. They'd be together 50% at our house and share mummy and daddy. And then they would go to the other houses and see each other pretty much the whole time. Early on, they weren't living together, but it was a lot, babe. It was a lot. I was really annoyed at the beginning. I was like, this is so incestual. Like, what's going on? I just was really annoyed. I was like, this is not what I need. Like, why do you have to do this? Like, you guys knew, like, you knew what you were doing. And it's just, it added a lot of stress to our relationship at the time.
And meanwhile, you are also pregnant with both of the girls' half brother.
Yes.
So they're both about to get a half brother while both of their parents are now dating each other.
Yes.
Okay. So this is where the situation is right now.
Yes. It was a lot. I was very annoyed at the beginning because I just felt like kind of a bit like, did you do this on purpose? Because there are plenty of fish in the sea. Like, why are we all like this? And it was hard early on, like just figuring the dynamic out. There was conversations about, well, what school are we enrolling the girls into? Some people out of the four of us wanted that school. And, you know, there was just like back and forth. There was he said, she said, triangle type stuff going on. It was like, it was drama. It was really, it affected my ex, the boy's dad, a lot more than it did me probably, but that really flowed through the relationship anyway. Like he really affected him. So that was added stress. And I just want to say now, guys, while you're listening, my ex-husband and the boy's dad, ex-wife, are still together. They are engaged, they're getting married, they have had two more children together, or two children together. So the girls actually share four brothers. I hope you guys are keeping up here. And I'm really happy for them. And jokes on us, really, because they lasted. Like, we can all joke about it now. But we could not joke about it at the time. And I just want to say, like, I have so much respect for them and I wish them all the best. And this is, you know, life happens, and sometimes
when Lauren and I were talking about this podcast, she was like, do you think I need to put that story in? And I was like, you absolutely do, so that we can have a moment where we're not stressed and crying about the situation. We need an interjection of some laughter before we go into the second part of the story, which is where we're headed now.
Yeah.
So you have Bodhi, who's the first boy with your new partner at the time. Mm-hmm. How was that? How were you guys going as partner parents through the birth and then into, you know, new life with Bodhi and all of that?
I think that period of time was really good. Like, Bodhi was a really cruisy baby. I did have like a little bit of complications, like breastfeeding and post-birth, that like it was hard, but Bodhi was the best. And I think we kind of like coming out of that, I think there was this little space where like, I was getting my body back and my business was doing really well. I had, you know, grown my business to this point that I had been working towards. And so that was really taking the pressure off financially. I could be at home. It was okay. Then I think Bodhi was like 4 or 5 months and I got pregnant again. It's even hard to say. Oh my God. So what not to do basically is the heading of this podcast. No, look, accidents happen, and my little Finny, I love him so much. I would never change what happened, but finding out I was pregnant when I had a baby that I don't even think Bodhi could sit up. He was literally like a baby was confronting. Like, oh, I was, and there was a period of time where we were like, can we do this? Like, is this crazy? Like, we were, that was going to be number four because we had the girls and Bodhi. So that meant like a bigger car. We needed like a seven seater. It was just like, it was a lot. And I think the first like couple of days we were just, when we found out, I was like, I don't know. And then we kind of just came together and was like, we can't not do this. Like, this just kind of wasn't an option for us to not go through with it. So
we had that.
So building a business, having all the kids, doing all the things, like being pregnant, having really bad back issues when I was pregnant with Finn, it was just a lot of stress on that, on the relationship. And like looking back, I just think, God, we had no hope. Like, it was just one thing after another that like is not ideal when you're getting to know someone and you're trying to build a really good foundation of a relationship. Like, it's just, it's a lot of stress. I 10 out of 10 do not recommend that.
Oh gosh. Okay. So let's talk about the incident that happened. So you were pregnant. You had Bodhi, who was a newborn. You were building mm-hmm. a huge business. You were co-parenting two girls, two 3-4-year-olds, mm-hmm. and you are now pregnant. And we are going to talk about what happened when yes. you were pregnant.
Yes, we are. So I was 34 weeks pregnant, and we had like a bit of a rough day. Like, there was this random arguments, nothing crazy, and he had said to me, I'm gonna go to the gym, which was not abnormal, to be honest. Like, he's very into his health and fitness, so I didn't really think twice. But it was a like a nighttime gym session, and so I was like, okay, I'll get the kids to bed. I think I had a headache that day, so he'd like sorted the kids and then he went to the gym. Anyway, when he got home, he thought that I was asleep. Like, I was kind of just like laying in bed. I wasn't asleep though. And he, it was weird. He just like walked in and laid into bed. And I could smell this like really nice smell, like perfume. And I was, you know, when you, well, you don't know, but when you're pregnant, your smell is, you're like a bloodhound. And I was like, what is that? I was like, what is that smell? And I just knew instantly. My heart just dropped. Like, I just remember feeling, I knew something was wrong. Like, I just knew something had happened. And he was like, what do you mean? It's the gym hand soap. And I'm like, that's no hand soap. Like, that's nice perfume. I know what perfume smells like. And he started getting really like defensive and aggressive, and this was like late at night. Grabbed his pillow and was like, I don't know why, you know, you don't believe me, blah blah blah. He's like, I'm gonna go sleep out in the lounge room. And remember sitting in bed, I was like shaking, and I just remember thinking, like, I can either like try go to sleep now and just deal with it in the morning, or I can press him and try and find out what had happened, because I just felt like I needed mm-hmm. I just couldn't go to sleep. And so I hopped up and I went out to the lounge room, and I was like, you're going to tell me now, like, the truth, because I know that's not the truth. And he like just spat out all these lies and just kept like changing the story. And anyway, he grabbed his stuff and he's like really aggressively, it was just like, if you don't believe me, like, I'm going to go, and left. So this was in the middle of the night. His daughter was like asleep in the house, and he left his laptop here. And I was like, okay, I know his laptop's linked to his iMessages. I'm going to open it and just see if I can see anything. And instantly he messaged his best mate and was like, I just fucked up and I just slept with someone and Lauren knows. And so I just read this message conversation of him just clearly openly like admitting. And oh, I can't even, like, my whole world just like crumbled. Like, being heavily pregnant, about to push out a baby. Bodhi was only at this point like 13 or 14 months old. He was just walking, like just taking his first steps. He was just like a big baby. Kenzie was about to start prep. It was just so, like, I actually can't even put into words like what that felt like.
Just the betrayal, the heartache. Like, I just want to, like, every single person listening to this podcast right now has either been there or they know a best friend that's been there, and they feel it to the core. It's that gut feeling that my whole life has just changed forever. I am just ruined. Like, I have full body goosebumps right now. I could cry because it's trauma, and it's this betrayal by somebody whose child you were carrying, and this complete lack of respect. And then the fact that he storms out and basically tells you it's your problem, leaves you with the kids, like, just the whole thing. It's a lot.
Yeah. I guess, like, I honestly never even thought that that would happen. Like, that was not even a thought that crossed my mind, that I could get cheated on pregnant. Like, this is the most incredible thing, to grow a baby and to have a family with someone and to be completely shitted on while, like, the most vulnerable state a woman could ever be in is really, really hard. So the next morning, I had to get up. I had to take his daughter to school and my daughter. I think I had to drop Bodhi off at daycare. Then I had to go to a midwife appointment by myself at the hospital. At this point, there was no, like, I'm sorry, apologies. Like, he knew I knew, but there was nothing. And I had to show up at this midwife appointment. And I was so embarrassed, like, that I didn't tell them anything the whole time I was going to these midwife appointments, like, before birth. I just couldn't even tell them that I was going to be there pushing out a baby on my own, because that happened. Like, it was just this weird where I was like, I'm just going to pretend like I'm okay and like nothing happened, because I can't even have that conversation with these strangers. Like, I just could, I was like, if I open my big fat mouth, I won't stop crying and I'll be in the fetal position. But that period of time from 34 weeks pregnant to when I had Finn at 39 weeks was the hardest time of my life. Like, I cried every day. I cried. I would wake up in the middle of the night and be crying, like bawling my eyes out. Like, I would wake up and just instantly remember the pain, and it would be like this physical, like, my heart was so heavy. I remember just being like, I'm broken. Like, I just felt like I can't come back from this. Like, this has completely ruined me. Like, I just felt like I was humiliated, which is so sad as well to like feel like that. And I remember telling people, and they'd be like, you shouldn't feel like that. And I don't know why, like, it was so humiliating, like, to have to go through that. And not only, like, was that obviously, like, so disrespectful and just horrible, I think what made it worse was, like, the disrespect and the what came after that. Because you would imagine someone, you know, making a mistake like that, being, you know, on their hands and knees being like, I'm so sorry, like that, you know, and just really recognizing that they've completely ruined your life. But it wasn't like that, and that was probably harder to come to terms with, that, like, someone can do that and then someone can continue to shit on you and not at least just really acknowledge and be like, genuinely sorry for what they did.
I mean, obviously we're both crying because I don't know anybody in this situation who would have handled it the way that you did. I saw everything. I remember getting the message from you the night it happened. I was in Hawaii and you said, he's cheating on me. And I almost fell to my knees, not because I didn't think he could, but how you were possibly feeling, because it was so, like, I can imagine when you say you woke up in the middle of the night, like you couldn't breathe. You know, that pain is like so overwhelming. You not only feel like you've been betrayed by this person, but you also feel like somebody's died because they're essentially gone from your life because he wasn't showing up and he wasn't doing those things. And you also have to have the grace and the humility and the resilience to also have a relationship with them because they are the parent of your children. And you're now facing birth. And I remember you telling me, like, I'm going to give birth alone. I am going to be in there alone. I don't think he's going to be there. And I'm sure that even the decision about whether you wanted him there was, I mean, just all these things that you should not have to do when you are 34 weeks pregnant. You should not have to be wondering, are they going to be there? What am I going to tell my friends and family who already didn't love him for you, but still supported you? I mean, I don't even know if you can condense how you were in that time.
To be honest, like, I had to really sit down and spend some time, like, thinking about that period of my life, because it's kind of blurry now. Like, I literally don't remember it. And I think that's just, I guess, trying to deal with the trauma and the weight of that, the emotions that I felt. Like, I just don't even know if I'll fully ever really remember how it was. But I do think that I didn't get a chance to grieve because I had to wake up and be okay for Mackenzie, who, you know, was starting school and very, very aware of the fact that something had happened, you know, and that I wasn't okay. And like, to just kind of have to put on a brave face for your kids and drop her off on her first day at prep and put on a happy face in front of all of the parents at school, and for him to have to be there as well, because his daughter is starting at the same school. Just, it was so hard. It was, yeah, I can't even, I don't know.
So I want to, it's hard to, like, get off the topic and try and go on to something else, because it was just so painful. And, you know, I came over to Australia and I saw you, and I have never seen a more broken person. Can't even look at you right now. You talked about how you felt embarrassed.
Yeah.
And like, I imagine a lot of shame and guilt probably came into that as well. As women, we sit in those emotions a lot more than men, sort of shame and guilt and how could I let this happen and all of those things. If anybody has been through this, or they are going through this, or they know somebody, what would your advice be specifically around that emotion of, I feel embarrassed, I feel ashamed that somebody did this to me? Because it's not a you thing, Lauren. I mean, you are one of the most phenomenal people I've ever met. And if anybody had have thought this would happen to you, they would be crazy. What would your advice be to somebody sitting in that embarrassment and that shame over what somebody else chose and made a conscious decision to do to them?
Look, I think, like, to some extent, you have to sit in the feelings and feel them and, like, just go through the motions. I wish I had some, like, magic answer to get them straight out of that place that they're in, but you can't change what has happened to you, but you can use that as an opportunity to learn more about yourself and to grow through all of the challenges. And it is a really amazing opportunity to flourish and to come out the other side. And I remember, although I did feel all those things and it was extremely hard, I knew that it was happening for me, and I knew that there was going to come a point in time where I could look back and be like, thank God that happened. And I really am at that place now. Like, I could look at him and say, thank you for doing that. And I wouldn't be who I am today if it wasn't for all of that. And I needed that to happen, I think, for me to really step away from that relationship, because I was trying so hard to make it work. And there was a lot of pressure on me to, I had this idea of like what it could be. And I was really, really trying my best to keep it all together. And look, I think like you need to be kind to yourself. You need to find a really good support network. And I did have that. I had a lot of people that were there for me and that I could talk to if I needed. And that did help a lot. Journal, go and get some professional help. Like, it's not shameful to do that. And I wish I did that sooner. It took me over a year to go and actually speak to someone about it all. And just know that it's going to get better. Like, it is absolutely going to get better, and you're going to come out the other side of this so, so strong and so resilient. And now, you know, coming out all of that the other side, like, I just know that I can handle anything that gets thrown my way. But yeah, it's easy for me now to say all this stuff, I think, but I do remember, like, it's nothing anyone could say was going to make me feel better. And I really had to go through like some dark days and feel it, you know, and not rush that process of just trying to be like, well, I'm going to get over it. So, you know, like, I really sat with it for a while.
So talk me through the birth, not the actual birth. Let's go into the birth and then a little bit after that.
Yeah. So after like that all happened, there was a period of time where I guess I was questioning like, should I try and make this work? Which I know is like crazy, but I guess I was thinking like, should I be just trying for the kids? And like, this is another failed relationship. And I felt so just like, I think I was embarrassed. Like, it was just all happening again, and that I was going to be alone again. But not only that, I have three children to, like, there was a lot of thoughts going through my head. Like, I hadn't ever thought about trying to push out a baby on my own. I always just thought he was going to be there. And that thought was so scary to do that by myself. And so there was a period of time where I guess we were trying to maybe work it out. And it was touch and go, but I did want him to experience the birth, and I didn't want to use that as a way to punish him by saying like, you can't be there.
Mm-hmm.
I also do understand completely, like, it is completely a woman's like right to say no. If you're in that situation and you don't want that person there, like, you're allowed to say no as well. But I think I was like, I need someone, and he'd been there for me with Bodhi, and I guess I just was like, I don't want to take away that experience for him, and for him to, you know, like, I don't want him to have to say, oh, I wasn't there when you were born, like, and have to, I don't know. And I guess that's the nice person inside of me that was really considering him and the kids and kind of having to deal with that. So he was there for the birth. I ended up getting induced 39 weeks pregnant. I had just like some random things going on with a crossover of blood between like them and me. And so they just wanted to induce me, which was good because I was like, just get this baby out. Like I just,
you didn't have anything left.
Oh, I was like, I'm done. Like, just get it out so that I can not be pregnant anymore. And I think I was just like, I need this over so I can, it's one step closer to me, like being healing. But it was hard too. Like I was so worried about what that stress was doing to Finn on like a physical level. Like it scared me. I was like, I'm gonna lose this. Like there was thoughts of me losing Finn because of, I just was like, how can a baby survive this sort of like pain? And like, it was, I just felt so bad. And I think, I don't know, Finn and I will always probably have like a special connection, and just going through that together. It might not make sense to anyone that's hasn't had a baby, but I just remember like being just feeling so broken and so overwhelmed. And I was like, I can't feel like this because it's affecting the baby. And like, this could be really bad for Finn. And it was a hard time. So it was good to have Finn. I definitely was glad not to be pregnant anymore. And we were actually on a business chat, like a catch up. I think Finn was about 9 days old. I remember it so clearly. And I was breastfeeding him on the couch on a Zoom call with you, and kind of we were just like, right, you know, what are we going to do, talking about business and just getting me on in a good place. And I get a call from the boy's dad, and I was literally, I don't know if you remember, I was like,
I remember
breastfeeding Finn, and I had the laptop balancing, and I was
had
like,
the phone on speaker.
Yeah, well, I actually, what happened was he called once, I denied it. And then he called again and I denied it. I was like, I literally couldn't talk. And then he called a third time and I was like, hang on, Vic, need to answer this because he obviously something is wrong. Like, I, you know, and I put it on speaker. And he verbally attacked, like it was
abusive.
It was mortifying for someone else to hear how he spoke to me. And I just, my heart just dropped. I think like, it was the fact that you had heard that too, like that accountability, I guess, of like, okay, someone else has heard this now. Like, this is not cool. And I was very embarrassed. And I remember getting off the phone and you saying like, Lauren, no, like that's.
I'll never forget that conversation because, I mean, I already was so worried about you and I was so far away. And, you know, you and I are so deeply connected from everything we've been through together. And I listened and I was crying. And it was because I was so broken that there was somebody that could treat you like that. The mother of a newborn, and you were on a business call with me trying to figure out how to pay the bills and build the business so that you could afford the life for your family. And he felt entitled enough to verbally abuse you. And it was verbal abuse. And it was scary. And it was not okay. And it was the first time that I had heard it for my own. And I was just destroyed for you because it was that bad. It was the worst verbal abuse I've ever heard. And I was so sorry. And I was just crying. And I just remember saying like, I'm so sorry that this is happening to you. And I think that it was a good thing because when somebody else knows, you can't hide it anymore. When somebody else witnesses it, I wasn't going to let you stay. And let me tell you, if I was in Australia, I would have flown to you and I would have gotten you the hell out of there. To be honest, I would have scooped you and the kids up and I would have said, I'm taking them with me until he is out of your life. And it it was just this traumatic time, and he was probably unraveling because of, you know, where everything was and what he did. And it was just a lot. Like, if, you know, I'm sure people are listening to this podcast being like, wow, I don't even know how she survived. And that is what we went through together. And you have survived, and you are an incredible mother. And those boys are so lucky to have you. And I'm so proud of you, because, you know, to this day, you have held yourself with grace and love and compassion when you didn't have to, and you did. And I'm so proud of you.
That was definitely like, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. Really, that was the moment where I was like, enough. I loved
it. And, you know, I think every body needs that at some point, whether it's in a relationship or it's in a workplace. At some point, something happens and you say, I can't come back from this. Even if I wanted to, and even if you turned into the person of my dreams, I won't ever forget this. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, the me being on the call and the circumstances for you, that was the moment that you said, I can't go back. And that was where you probably started to then take steps forward into that sort of healing journey. And how did things end with him? So that, you know, how did things end?
Yeah. So after that phone call, I was like, I can't do this anymore. It wasn't even like, there wasn't even space for us to work on it. It was like too much disrespect had happened. I called mom and I was like, I told her and I was crying, and she was like, she was traveling at the time. So she was down in New South Wales with a family friend of mine. And she said, get the kids in the car. You need to get out of that house, and you need to get away from where you are, and you just need space and you need safety, and come down here. She was like, I'll look after you. I'll help the kids. So I literally packed my car.
Oh, I remember, actually.
I drove 9 hours with two babies in the car, and hung out there for a week down in New South Wales. And that was good. Like, I needed support. I just had no one, you know, around me. So it was good to like just see mom and see my family friend Kim and just get away. But I guess that was like the end. There was no like nothing after that. But it's been a really hard journey, obviously, because we do have two boys together, and we did have to get to a point where we could co-parent and kind of be somewhat on the same page and you know, have somewhat of a relationship so that we can be parents and be the best parents we can be for the boys. So that's been a journey. And it's, as you can imagine, was very hard at the beginning, like being so disrespected over and over again. And I haven't even, like, we've just scraped the surface on what actually happened during that time. There was a lot. So as well, like, Finn was a newborn. He was breastfeeding. He couldn't just go and start having nights with his dad. Like, it was a really hard time. And there was no like right or wrong or a playbook for how to kind of handle that situation. And so it was hard. And there was a lot of like pushing back on both sides, because I was like, well, he doesn't even know who you are. Like, I can't like just stop breastfeeding. And, you know, like, so I really wanted to try and hold on to this breastfeeding thing so that I didn't have to give him up and give him away. And I obviously wanted to get to a point where we could get like have a great co-parenting relationship, and for him to see Finn as much as he could. But I guess coming from a really protective mother, you know, I was like, I can't just hand my baby over to around, you know, he's obviously not around him, but like Finn hadn't spent any time with him. It was hard. So we started off really slow, like, you know, a couple of little like stints of like 4 hours, and then he would bring him back. And then we started with like a night here and there, and he moved on really quickly, which was also quite hard, I think. So I was like, that's my baby, and you're like playing happy family with a new woman who's just like, it was a lot. And like, I was very triggered by everything he did and just had no room for movement. Like if he disrespected me, like I just felt like I had to stick up for myself. I couldn't just keep like laying down and taking it all. Like, so I was pushing back and making sure that I was trying to stand up for myself in all of these situations. It was hard. So yeah, like it's been
how
a lot.
How's the co-parenting today? 4 years on.
Yeah, look, we're in a really good place. I'm happy with where we're at. Obviously, you know, there is room for improvement always, but we're good. There's nowhere, like we've got an agreement. He is actually recently, he just got a job so he can see the kids more. So he's got them about, I think 40% of the time, which is really good. And I think good for the boys to see him more consistently and regularly, because he was at points working away for like 2 and 3 weeks at a time, which is a long time. So the kids are happy. Like it's good. It's as good as I think it can be given everything that has gone on. And we have a mutual respect and we really do try and make decisions based on what's best for the kids. And same with Mackenzie's dad. We have an incredible co-parenting relationship. Like there is so much respect there. We have never had any issues. Like it's just this mutual understanding of what's best for Kenzie and this give and take and flow and fluidity. And just like we, you know, Dan wants her for something, I want her for something. Like we it's back and forward and it's great. There are no issues at all. I'm really proud of us. And we can talk and laugh about our relationship and how much we've both grown personally over the years. I'll send him photos of us, like, and I'm just like, look at us. Like, it's so crazy. So it's good. I'm like, in terms of Mackenzie's dad, it's great.
Mm-hmm. I just am so proud of you, honestly. And if anyone gets anything from this, it's hope that there is something on the other side and that you can come through it. And so as we wrap up, I want to talk about becoming her. So I want to talk about the journey that you went on, and we don't have to go into massive specifics, but the journey that you've obviously been on post heartbreak and being a solo mom to where you are now and where you're going. And, you know, the advice that you would give people, any insights that you have now in all of the things, and then what's next? What's the next reinvention for Lauren Peters?
Yeah. So I think obviously we're condensing quite a few years now, and it's been a big journey of like healing and finding myself post that traumatic event. Like it's been a lot. And like you speak about all the time, healing is not linear. You can take 5 steps forward and 10 steps backwards, and it's a bit of a journey. And you think you've kind of got to a certain point, and then something else will pop up and trigger you, and you won't be aware of it. And so it's been a big journey for me over the last few years. Straight after all of that, I think I really dived into my business and used that as kind of like a band-aid. I definitely was like, as a distraction. And I also didn't have a choice. I was very much like, I need to financially provide for 3 children. And like, there was a big push, you know, and I just knew that was what I had to do. And in actual fact, like my business blew up in that year, but I think I was just like using it as a way not to deal and not to really feel all the feels. And I kind of definitely mask a lot of it by diving into this new identity of like single mom, like killing it in business, travel. Like it was good. Like I actually look like 2019. I'm like, it was a good year, even though the beginning was very, very shit. It got good and my business grew. Like I think we were doing $40,000 or $50,000 a month up to $230,000 in a month. And that was through literally the hardest year of my life. Like having a newborn, having a 15-month-old and having a 4-year-old start prep, like, and healing from this incredible thing financially, providing for the family, holding a household together, like literally doing everything. My mum was a huge help as well. Shout out to Cassie P. She's amazing. She'll love that little shout out. Sorry. Yeah, it's been a lot. I've definitely learned a lot about myself. I've I've had a couple of like serious relationships over the years. And I think like upon reflection, I don't think I hadn't addressed everything. And I think like, I kind of thought I had healed, but it's interesting getting into these relationships that really weren't what it wasn't what I needed. And just actually while we're on this topic, it's very hard to date as a single mom of three who's very successful in her business and who's very personally developed. I found that quite hard because it's hard to find someone who's kind of on that level, who understands your work ethic, who is willing to grow and willing to be emotionally available and take responsibility and show up for me how I need as like a strong, independent woman.
Absolutely, babe.
Yeah. So I think, look, I just probably was so desperate to be loved and just I really wanted like that. I just wanted to be loved well. And I think I was very naive and I looked past a lot of things and I learned a lot of lessons over the years. There's been relationships that I've really triggered like those trust issues and probably made that trauma worse by the outcomes of all of that. But it all happens for a reason, I think. Yeah, I'm in a great place now and I wouldn't change anything. I think in terms of like looking at what's next for me, I just feel I'm excited for what's coming and I just feel like I'm in such a good place. I'm still healing. Like, I'm not gonna lie, there's still things that come up that I'm like, ooh, where's that coming from? You know, like I have to work through this. I don't think it's ever really over. We're constantly learning and evolving and being challenged by new things, but it's exciting. I'm really focusing on the kids. Finn starts school next year, so that is just crazy. So all the kids will be in school as of next year, which is exciting. I just think I survived the really hard years and I'm excited. Like, no more kids. F no to that. This is a whole new era for me and I'm excited just not to be that like one that's always pregnant and popping out children and like, I don't know, it's just this new identity that I feel I'm stepping into. I'm very focused on my health and my health journey has been just amazing for me over the last year, really focusing on just healing my gut, all the things. So I'm excited.
Lauren Peters, you are one of a kind, let me tell you. And I'm so glad that you shared that today because I hope that you found it like a little bit healing, like a little bit cathartic in a way to speak about it and think, gosh, man, I survived some stuff. And you, like I've said on this podcast already, like you did it with grace and resilience and compassion and humility and integrity. And I watched front row everything unfold in your life from the very beginning. And I just couldn't be more proud. You are an incredible role model for your children. You are a phenomenal friend and someone is going to be so lucky to be with you and to have you in their life, the right person. And, you know, doing the work and facing it front on and coming out stronger. And I'm just so proud of you. I love watching your journey to becoming her. I know it's going to be so much more. You're only 31. We're only 31 and we're just getting started. So thank you for being on here and adding so much value to people. I will put all of Lauren's socials in the show notes so you can follow her. You can see her beautiful life with her family and business and fitness and health and all of that. And thank you for being on here and sharing so vulnerably.
My pleasure. And I hope, yeah, it's resonated with some people and inspired some people maybe who are going through really, really tough times because life's going to happen. It's not, you know, that it's, I definitely don't need sympathy. Like I hope that this just actually gives people some strength to carry on and just know you're going to come out so much better.
Oh my goodness. So guys, if you liked this episode, please go ahead and subscribe to my podcast, Becoming Her with Victoria McHugh. Please share this, send it to somebody who's been here, who is going through heartbreak or is feeling these things. There is somebody that you know that could benefit from this. Lauren, thank you for sharing your story. I know one day you'll probably write a book about it. We need a book about it. We really do. We always say the book needs to be called How to Spot the Red Flags.
What not to do.
And on that, Lauren, thank you guys. I will be back with another episode, a solo episode in 2 weeks. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Bye.